This is Women's Stories from the Bible, class number 2, Biblical Faithfulness, the story of Miriam. Okay, I wanted to just wrap up a couple of things from yesterday that I don't want to take more than about 7 minutes doing. We ended up talking a little bit about Phoebe, so I went rushing off as a good scriptural scholar and checked some of the resources in our reference library. And I suppose most people have heard of William Barclay. You know, he has commentaries on most of the Bible. But William Barclay's commentaries. Now, I haven't come to them because they tended not to be really big in the Catholic Church, but I do know they're very big in Protestant denominations. So I looked up Phoebe, and this was published in 75, by the way. And so it says, Phoebe came from Cenchreae, which was the port of Corinth. Sometimes she's called deaconess, but it isn't likely that she held what might be called an official position in the church. There can't have been no time in the Christian church when the work of women was not of infinite value. It must have been especially so in the days of the early church, in the case of baptism by total immersion as it then was, in the visitation of the sick, in the distribution of food to the poor. Women must have played a big life in the part of the work of the church, but they didn't at the time hold any official position. Paul bespeaks a welcome for Phoebe. He asks the people at Rome to welcome her as God's dedicated people ought to welcome each other. There should be no strangers in the family of Christ. There should be no need for formal introduction between Christian people, for they are sons and daughters of the one Father, and therefore brothers and sisters of each other. And then it goes on and on and on. Whenever a stranger comes amongst us, Paul's advice still holds good. Welcome such a one as God's dedicated people ought to welcome each other. Well, I read that, and it sounded like he was just sort of acting like a social agent. You know, she was going to go there, so he thought he'd send a letter of recommendation with her. And it, I sort of felt as if I were being damned with faint praise, you know. But this other one is a commentary invitation to the New Testament through Image, and this is 1982. And this author talks about Phoebe, and it says, Phoebe, the first mentioned, may have been the bearer of this cover letter to Romans. Paul does not send her greetings, but tells his readers to welcome her. Phoebe is, Paul reminds them, a person of authority, a deacon who has influence over many, even Paul himself. Whether the title deacon referred to the specific office as described in Acts 6, or simply to the more general category of servants, which is the original meaning of deacon, is not sure. In any case, two significant observations can be made. First, the reference to Phoebe, a female deacon, contains the oldest and the first New Testament designation of this Christian service. Secondly, this woman has a position of authority recognized by Paul and the church, and her sex is not a deterrent. In fact, it was not an issue. So take your pick. It was sort of fun to check those out. I wanted to know if there was anything left over yesterday in terms of your understanding where feminist scripture scholarship is coming from. I want very briefly, in fact, to put up something that I've worked on myself in another setting. As I mentioned yesterday, liberation theology tends to be a term which developed in Latin America and has specific application to the Latin American understanding of the gospel as needing to be a tool to help them out of unjust social systems, political systems, and church systems. It is a more generic term, however, so a lot of times when you hear the term liberation theology, it's usually going to talk about that phenomenon first. I don't know if this is going to work good this way. I just want to quickly go down this chart, and if you're interested in writing it down later, that's fine, I won't erase it. I put liberation theology on one side and feminist theology on the other. This comes from Robert McAfee Brown's book, Theology in a New Key. He's a very, very respected Protestant theologian with particular emphasis in liberation theology and feminist theology. Now, he takes, for understanding of theology, he takes 6 points of way of developing theology. First, the starting point. The interlocutor, which basically means the person or the group of persons who is talking about that theology. The tools that are used in developing it. The analysis. Oh, I forgot women's here. Okay. Put that in. the engagement, how you take the theology and engage it in terms of the world, and then theology itself, where it starts. And so the starting point for Latin American liberation theology is the poor, those who did not have power, and who are really being messed up by the system. But they are the ones where you start with this kind of theology. Starting point for feminist theology is obviously women. In terms of the interlocutors, the ones who interpret and live that theology, in liberation theology, it's the non-person, the poor. On this side, non-person women. Now what that means is not that they aren't people in God's sight, but that they traditionally have not had positions of authority and power within the system. So they are basically outside of the system of theology or outside of the social structure in terms of being able to affect changes. The tools which are used to develop theology, for liberation theology, primarily the social sciences are tools. And that's where you get a lot of people yelling and screaming that they're Marxists and stuff like that. But they realize that the oppression of the poor comes from unjust social structures. And so they spend a lot of time analyzing socio-political systems in terms of, does it oppress or liberate the poor? The analysis, I don't know. Put that up there. For liberation theology is that social conflict is a reality. And there are certain groups of people in Latin America, and as that's applied to other groups, that are not getting what they need in order to survive and live full human lives. The analysis in terms of women is that women have traditionally been excluded in terms of the structures, in terms of liturgy, in terms of leadership. Now, how you engage it in the world, the engagement for liberation theologians is that society, politics, and the church have to be liberated to allow these people to have some power over their own lives. The engagement for women in feminist theology is that we have to enable and develop women's stories. We have to bond together as women. That does not mean sacrificing men, by the way, but a sense that somehow, as women, we have needs and gifts that we need to give each other. And then we can give them to the whole church. But we need to recognize our stories and our needs as women. And this then goes to pointing out a challenge to whatever patriarchal structure which would not allow the fullness of women's experience to be reflected. In terms of theology, this is really important and very different from traditional theology. Theology is the second act. You don't go and do theology, you know, you don't go and study theology, but you start with your life experience in here as the poor and beside as women. And then as you reflect upon that experience together, then the second act, rather than the first, is actually theologizing about that or developing the language of theology. I didn't want to get a whole bunch into that, but it's been very helpful for me to look at that. And then you can apply that to any kind of theology, see where the starting point is, and who is the one doing the speaking for that theology, the tools that are used, and sort of work down on that. So if you want to, you know, copy that down later, I'm just going to take it down now. So in one of the assignments we had, there's one other woman in this morning's class that took liberation theology from Gustavo Gutierrez at Berkeley last summer, was to take that pattern of liberation theology developed there and then apply it to various things. And we had about 10 assignments, and we went to groups. And one was how you take liberation theology and develop something in a middle-class suburban parish, which was sort of interesting, or how you would take that model and develop feminist theology, or how you would work with marginalized people of other races or social status within your community. And it's very handy to help you focus on understanding that. Okay, I wanted to get into the story of Miriam. Tell me the important women in the story of Miriam. I hope some of you rest right home and spent all day reading Exodus and Numbers. So are you ready to do this? Okay, there are a lot of important women that make the Exodus possible. What are their names? Okay, out loud.
Jacobin.
All right, I won't make you spell it. Watch what's up. Okay. Okay. The mother of Moses. Okay. Obviously Miriam, right? His sister. Now, those poor, brave midwives who deserve names, who dared the Pharaoh's own authority. What are their names? Okay, Shifra. These pens don't work. Okay, and Pua. And then, of course, on the Egyptian side, who? The Pharaoh's daughter. Okay, so we have five women here, the beginning of the Exodus tradition, and without whose courage, Moses would never have survived. His mother giving birth when she knew very well that the laws about male children were being enacted. Can you even imagine what it would be like to go through the process of pregnancy, knowing that half of your children would be killed as soon as they were born? Can you imagine an act of faith like that, that would still choose to go through that process? Miriam, the older sister, by the way, she's not named by name in this early account, it just said Moses' sister was in the bulrushes guarding Moses. Then Shifra and Pua, the two midwives who made a barefaced lie to Pharaoh, and their claim was that the Hebrew, it was rather another left-handed compliment. I shouldn't say that, I'm left-handed and so is Jan. Okay, it was a right-handed compliment. And it basically was that the Hebrew women are stronger than the Egyptian women, and they give birth before we get there. So it's rather interesting way to confront the Pharaoh in some sort of less than direct way, preserving hopefully their own lives, but also challenging the systems and preserving the life of the male children born. Then Pharaoh's daughter taking a risk, when her father himself had said no more male Hebrew children are to live. So in Exodus 2, we have Moses' sister, without the name, putting the child in the river and getting a nursemaid. You know, when she follows the child evidently along the Nile, and when she sees her brother being discovered, she comes out from hiding and actually says, "Shall I get you a nursing, not a midwife, what's the word I'm looking for? A wet nurse, okay, a wet nurse for this child." Then in Exodus 2, there is a genealogy. And of course, as you might have guessed, the two who are named in the genealogy are Aaron and Moses. Now, Miriam is not named as part of that group. Exodus 15 is a very exciting one. And if you have Bibles, why don't you open it up to that now. This is the time when they had crossed the Red Sea or the Reed Sea, depending on your scriptural interpretation of that. They had been freed from the land of Egypt. They were safe. They had broken the power of Egypt. And then it starts off in chapter 15. Do any of your Bibles have headings other than just the chapters of verses? And if so, what do they say?
The Song of Moses and Miriam.
Oh, very good. Which one is that?
New International.
Oh, okay, NIV, okay. Anyone else?
Song of Victory.
Song of Victory, okay. Mine says Song of Victory, that's Jerusalem Bible. What about that? I don't think that has titles in it, does it? Yeah, RSV.
This has the Song of Moses.
Okay, and does it say anything different through the rest of the chapter, or is it just Song of Moses? Let's see. Okay. And then Miriam sang to them, but yeah, it gets down in there. Okay. Rather interesting. Frequently, it is just called the Song of Moses. And what scripture scholars have discovered is the opening phrase, of Yahweh I sing, he has covered himself in glory, horse and rider he's thrown into the sea. That is repeated over in verse 21 of that thing. Sing of Yahweh, he has covered himself in glory, horse and rider he is thrown into the sea. Now many scripture scholars, well in fact most of them who are not in the fundamentalist camp, through textual studies and linguistic studies, and also some things that show up in Moses' song that happened later in history, have concluded that the original kernel of that song was the two verses that Miriam sang. And then this other song was written later. And it's rather interesting the way it's finally assembled in that the Song of Moses comes first and it's gigantic and very long, and then Miriam sort of tags along at the end with her two little verses. So you might want to reflect on that. Okay, in fact, the Interpreter's Bible Commentary claims that the Song of Moses probably dates from the United Kingdom, which is, of course, during the time of Saul, David, and Solomon, from the, about the, around 1000 BC, which is about probably 2.5 centuries after the Exodus as a reflection back on that experience. But that little tiny Song of Miriam is much older and seems to have actually dated as an oral tradition from the time of the Exodus itself. Then in Numbers 12, that's a very important one, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. What happens, as you know, the way the story goes, after they get out of the land of Egypt, there's a long time of wandering around. And then Moses' power increases. He becomes more and more of a power on this march. And it started out with him as a strong leader, but he gets stronger and stronger as the story goes. And then in Numbers 12, you have this very intriguing kind of chapter regarding both Miriam and Moses challenging Miriam and Aaron, challenging Moses' taking of a Cushite woman, someone outside of this pattern of relationship and of the storytelling, someone who did not believe as they did. And so they challenged Moses about that, marrying someone outside of the tribe, someone with different gods and different stories. And then God's answer comes down, and it's like whoop, just in the words of God, and it's very interesting that it seems in the text that it just says Miriam, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses. One is not singled out as necessarily the leader and one the follower. And yet, the anger of Yahweh blazed against the two of them, it says in verse 10, but he departed and Miriam was a leper. It's just a really interesting thing for me to read that, think, well, what's going on here? Somehow they were both challenging Moses and somehow Miriam ends up becoming the leper, and nothing seems to happen to Aaron. And then she is put outside the camp as a leper was separated for 7 days, although the people do not move on without her. She was obviously a very strong figure. They just were not going to go from there until she was ready to go with them. And then Exodus 20, just a very simple account in passing of her death before getting to the promised land. It just says Exodus 20, or is it Numbers 20? I think I meant Numbers 20. That's Numbers 20. It just says they were at Kadesh Barnea, which is rather interesting because that was one of the first parts of their journey, and they ended up there years and years later, sort of wandering. It's not that far where they were going. It probably, if one was in condition, could get there in several days. So somehow it was they were wandering back and forth and in and out, and so they're back almost at the beginning again, and Miriam dies there. Now what I'd like to do is put you again in small groups for 5 minutes, in groups of maybe six. And your assignment is this. It's a dramatic assignment, not an exegetical or text study assignment. And it doesn't matter to me how you do this is as long as you are faithful to your own understanding of that. When you get in the group of six, your assignment is to be Miriam, sitting outside the camp as a leper, and reflecting on your role in the Exodus experience and what it's like to be a leper outside the camp. And you don't have to come up to a consensus, but I want you to really try to put yourself in Miriam's position and feel what it must have been like for her to be outside the camp after all of her involvement in the Exodus from the very beginning. And I'll just give you about 5 minutes for that. So
I just wondered when they said, why didn't they get Pharaoh's wife in there every other verse?
Well, she was probably back in the court, you know.
Which one, right? Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, another question for each of the groups. How long did it take you before you were able to speak as Miriam? And how difficult was that for you to do? So it's a bite-fold question.
It's real hard.
It's really hard.
There's not much detail here at all.
That's right.
Yeah.
Was that sort of the feeling of the group? Did you finally get around to it? And what happened when you were able to do that? How did that feel to you?
I didn't feel too hard about doing it because I could identify with it being really unfair and unjust.
Okay. And then I'll go back and ask you exactly what kinds of things you're saying. What about this group here? Did you actually get around to finally talking about Miriam, and how difficult was that, and how long did it take you?
We did for just a minute, but then we got to sleep back.
Yes, the safe little, let's keep him out there.
It's hard to stay there.
Yeah, it is. Okay, there were about six groups down here, I think. What about whatever group is back there? I know you were a group.
I think we did pretty well talking this morning, but I felt like we were faking it. You know, we were adding so much. We had to draw out our imagination and put in what we didn't know about history and astrology.
Yeah. And yet, in a way, is that faking it? I mean, we don't have a very much.
Well, in our case,
yeah. It wasn't. Okay, I'll take your word. Yeah, but we do have to draw out of our imaginations and our life experiences. That's the whole point. And yet, we still sort of think we have to, you know, rush off and do this. Okay, this group.
It took us a while also to get into that frame of mind because we were trying to maybe more analyze, you know, what was going on during that time. But I think finally it was pretty much a consensus, even though we weren't supposed to come to a consensus.
Not necessarily, that was just wasn't the assignment.
Yeah, that we really felt it was unfair that Miriam got leprosy and Aaron just kind of, you know, nothing happened to Aaron. And why was it Miriam?
Okay,
we really questioned why was it her.
Okay, let's get to the other groups first before we go into what we actually came up with. I know I heard a lot of struggling over in this side of the room about getting into the role of Miriam. What was going on with these two groups?
I was going to say we ended up thinking that she probably enjoyed 7 days off.
Well, yes, but leprosy would be sort of yucky to do it. I mean, you could do that with a menstrual cycle, you know, with the Old Testament.
You know, she pregnant's minor.
Yeah, I think it's really differing. We started out with the anger.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get that in just a second. But you finally did it. What do you think took you so long to get into that?
Trying to understand going through.
Okay. What about the last group over here? But you finally
came to the same conclusion we did over there.
Okay.
Why Miriam?
But you finally did start, you were able to sort of try to feel as Miriam must have. I know it's, you know, we have no way of testing this out. She's been dead for 3,000 years, but. Okay, what about upstairs? Did you get into that?
We kind of decided that it was very difficult because the emotions of people in the Bible are not really described.
That's right. A lot, most of the time they aren't. Okay, now I want. Did I miss a group?
Did
I miss a group in talking? But you were finally able to talk as Miriam.
No.
No. Okay. No wonder they're sitting up. No. Okay. Okay, now I just want to go back and just quickly get some feelings and thoughts when you were Miriam, okay? Not when you thought she might be, but when you're actually talking as Miriam. What kinds of emotions and thoughts were coming out of you as Miriam? Anyone, I'll just sort of open that. Okay.
I have enough faith. I believe this is my cross to bear, and it's not going to be very long, so I shall bear it.
Okay, and you?
I didn't feel like that.
Okay, a little louder. I'm having trouble here. We want this on tape forever, you know.
Rock bottom, uh-huh. The depths of despair.
Okay. All right, any other?
I thought of Job, only I thought Job was far more forbearing than I would be as Miriam. Uh-huh. I was mad.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Angry that God could be such a spiteful, mean, but petty person.
Okay.
I felt that, the next verse after she has leprosy, Aaron turns to Moses and asks for forgiveness and repentance. He turns in repentance, so I feel that she realized the sin that she, and God, as God deals with us, and it says in 1 Samuel, God looks upon the heart. He might have seen her heart and had to deal with her in a certain way, I feel.
Okay, Annie?
Jealousy that my brother Aaron
didn't get right, okay. Okay. What about this whole group
angry
back there?
Angry and oppressed.
And angry and oppressed, okay.
One of the men back here said it was bad enough that she had to be put out, but to be given leprosy too.
Yeah, I don't think that'd be a whole bunch of fun, yeah.
I think she got real mixed feelings about her brothers because they try to intercede for her. Yeah. Although Moses might not have, he might have been so mad that he wouldn't have been involved at all, or Aaron might have been so relieved that he didn't get it.
Yes. Yeah.
But they both did, so that she's separated from her family, and there's that kind of anguish, and then, you know, and she loves them, and that's part of the pain of it. She loves them, wants to be with them.
Yeah.
And she's angry because she doesn't know why she's being punished.
What about the new wife?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what sin she committed. It's not clear.
Yeah.
It's more than Moses' sin is committed for his not going to the promised land.
Yeah, right. Okay.
She's doing God's will.
Yeah. What happens when you get into that? It's very easy, I have found, to sort of talk about that out there. What happens to your own feelings, though, when you enter into it? No matter what you finally discover, when you actually have to somehow take the role of Miriam, is that a new way for you of entering scriptural texts? Or? It's obviously pretty hard for most of you to do. Were there any benefits or harms in that? Or I don't even like to use those words, they're rather value-laden, but did you get some insights from that position which might have been different from just talking about Miriam as a 3,000-year-old dead prophet? Yes.
So just like the injustice that's going on today against women.
You can feel one then with Miriam in identifying in a different way.
She saved her brother's life. And the comment was, if you had been, fortunate you were a female because they would have tried to kill you if you were a male. Uh-huh. And yet they only needed a training kit. They would have wanted to kill the males as a threat to them because the women weren't a threat. Uh-huh.
Yep.
But, it's, same processes are going on. Anyhow, but she was, without her help, Moses wouldn't have lived. Mm-hmm. And she carried that role and sort of got totally cast out. Yeah, it's almost like politics. It's not what have you done for me in the past. What are you doing today? This minute. And if I'm doing something this minute, then you're
And another interesting historical reflection, when they left Egypt, they tended to be a fairly small group of people where leadership seemed to be fairly fluid and fairly shared. But during that time in the desert, the traditional, very, very structured model of male priesthood is being developed, including the ceremonials and Aaron and his sons, and that whole system is getting
set up, which totally excluded the women because they could not function in that. But that was not the pattern they had when they left Egypt. But by the time they get to the Promised Land, they had it all set up so that the men were the priests and the leaders. And so that whole other thing is going on during that time. Okay, I'd like
under
to...
Under adversity, they always come to the men.
Right.
Another thing is, though, I wonder if it ever entered your mind that we really only get really angry at the people we really care about. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
When she was sitting out there. God didn't get that angry at her
brother. And I enjoyed last night's sermon about God's anger and our anger. I think we need to reclaim that, not that we rush up and down the street and hit one another, but a sense that anger happens and it isn't always this horrible thing. That to be angry at injustice is part of what it is to be God and to be
every morning. For a while, you're never going to hear a thing on the tape. Let's go.
Could you close the door?
Let's go.
Wait a minute.
Ah, the sounds of Holden. Okay, Lois, were you talking?
Well, I forgot. Oh, okay. Stop and,
I think it made it easier, maybe, to identify with people who have long-term illnesses, uh-huh. how they're outcasted, disabled people, how they can be outcasted, and I mean, in a way. You could identify with those feelings and how oppressive that could be.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of times we can't be a lot of other people in our lives. We are limited by our own color, race, culture, denomination, gender. So I think it's a very valuable way to get some of that experience firsthand. Realizing that it's somewhat artificial in terms of the context. Now, I do have about a 14-minute tape, the story of Miriam, told from Miriam's point of view, and I would sort of like to do that, but I don't want to shut off discussion. So have most of the, is there something that really important needs to be said before we do that? I don't want to go over the hour.
I just wanted to ask about the personality of the women in this day, because I wondered if she spoke out a lot or if this was one of the few times that she got kind of feisty, because I know for me sometimes, and I think a lot of what happens in the women's movement as a generic kind of term is that a lot of times we're not used to taking a stand, a real strong stand. Yeah. And sometimes I know, even when I do, when I get real gutsy, it backfires. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if she had not taken a stand because of a culture and the way women were raised and what was expected of them, and all of a sudden she took a stand and it backfired. And that's what I was feeling like. And, whoa, I finally had the strength of, whether she was right or wrong, she set her mind.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think what we tend to do is to think the roles of men and women now or 10 years ago have been ordained forever in all cultures and at all times, and that isn't true, but it's sometimes hard to go back. I tend to think that she must have been a very strong woman, and even to be called prophetess, they didn't just toss that around to make you feel good, or because you happen to have a brother who's a prophet. It's a very strong term, and there are many, many strong women in the Bible, so I would think she's a very powerful figure. So, but we don't know. Okay, this tape takes about 14 minutes, so I'd like to play that now so we have a little time to talk about it afterwards before. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Da, 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 da.
Is there any God
this is
who
just
cares
the end of another
for one. Hagar?
And the Hagar's story. I can turn it up a little bit more, I think.
Who's speaking on the tape?
A story of
seven different women.
Choose life. I say to you, choose life that you and your descendants may live and flourish in the land our God has given to all the human family. Choose life, though you must risk your own life to bring to birth, to nurture, and to preserve life in the face of the forces of death. I am the Hebrew prophetess. born in the land of Egypt, the first Hebrew prophetess called by name. I am the daughter of Sarah, woman of faith who went to a strange land, trusting the God who leads us to unknown places. I am the daughter of Rachel and Rebekah, who gave their flesh and blood that the family of God might be carried on. I am the daughter of Jochebed, a daughter of Levi, whose family is to lead the worship of Yahweh. I am the daughter of generations and generations of slave women in bondage. We are beaten in our bondage, but we grow strong in our pain. I am Miriam, the prophetess. The Egyptian pharaoh, as hundreds of wars and political systems before him, and thousands of wars and political systems after him, would destroy our nation by destroying our men. He does not think the women matter. The life of a nation is not only in its men. The pharaoh called our midwives, Pua and Shipra, and he said, when you act as midwives for the Hebrew women and see them giving birth, if it is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, she may live. Girls don't matter. Could these midwives, daughters of Yahweh, the rock who bore us, the compassionate one who writhed in labor pains to give us life, could these daughters of Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel, who struggled to give birth, could these midwives destroy a child as it first saw the light of day? Pua and Shipra, ushers into the land of the living, put the laws of God before the laws of man. When the Pharaoh asked how the Hebrew people continued, the midwife said, the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. They are strong and give birth before the midwife arrives. Yes, we women are strong, but we need each other in our birthings and our nurturing. Oh, we need each other to preserve life. When my brother Moses was born, our mother Jochebed feared for his life. Would the systems of death stalk this baby as he grew? She put him in a papyrus basket that would float and hid him in the reeds near the edge of the Nile. I stood guard nearby. The sun was brilliant and touched the multicolored dress of the lovely young woman who came to the edge of the river to delight in its cool water. I knew the woman was the royal family. She smiled, laughed, and talked with those who seemed to be her maids. Their chatter was pierced by the cry of a baby awakened by them. I trembled. Will these Egyptian women know that this boy, wrapped in the swaddling clothes of the poor, is a Hebrew? Will they consider his life a threat to their power and have the child killed? I tiptoed near to listen. They followed the cries and opened the basket. The woman looked at his tiny hands and red tear-streaked face. She was moved with pity for him and said, it is one of the Hebrews' children. She picked him up, held him close to her heart, and rocked him. All eyes were on this fragile one who cried out for life. She was an Egyptian. He was a Hebrew boy, and she knew it. She was a princess, and he was of a despised group of slaves who threatened their power system. Moses cried again, and I could stand it no longer. I left my hiding place and went straight up to the woman. Shall I go and call one of the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you? I asked. Her dark eyes looked over my ragged dress, my bare, dirty feet, and finally into my faith, clearly the faith of a Hebrew. I felt bold and strong like the midwife. She must have felt compassionate like the midwife. Yes, she said. Can you get someone to nurse the child? She looked again at his soft face. Can you get someone to nurse my child? I gently took him from her arms. Our eyes met, both knowing what neither of us dared say. Oh, Moses grew strong in his own mother's milk. He grew wise as he heard our women's stories of a God who loves us with an everlasting love, and God who wishes freedom and dignity for all. Moses grew rich in knowledge as he lived at the palace of his second mother, the princess. He learned what it's like to be a free person. He learned of laws. He learned of governing people. One day, Moses was out walking. He saw a Hebrew slave brutally struck by an Egyptian. Though Moses never spoke of our people, of the mother who nursed him and of me who cared for him, his heart was with us, and he killed that Egyptian. Moses had to flee for his life to the land of Midian. I wondered if I would ever see my brother again. 40 years passed, and our bondage grew worse. Hebrew life was cheap, though the midwife preserved life. Was life as a slave worth living? Is it life to be little more than an ox or an ass? We cried out to the God who created us. Our God heard our groaning. Moses, with hair and beard grown long, Moses, with wisdom and strength refined in shepherds wandering, returned. He and our brother Aaron spoke of God who wished freedom for all the daughters and sons of Sarah and Abraham. I had spoken to the women of this for years, and now was the time for me to let the women know that our God was going to free us. We are destined for a land where children live, a land where we stand free and tall, imaging the God who bore us, imaging God in our compassion, in our strength, in our ability to share our milk of sustenance and our milk of wisdom. Moses and Aaron and I led the people out of the land of bondage. Our God made the sea open. The waters leapt up before us. The dry land supported our joyful feet. And when we arrived on the other shore, I knew myself as a woman, strong and beautiful, preserving life as our God does, freed from bondage and freeing others. We glorify God in our bodies. We claim the freedom our God has given in our bodies. Like hundreds of prophetesses before me filled with the Spirit of God, like thousands of prophetesses after me, filled with the Spirit of God. I led the people in praise. I led the people in prayer. I picked up a tambourine and I led the people in dance. Yahweh, our God, has done wonderful things. If we have been freed from bondage, from fear, let us dance. If we've been freed from doubt, from selfishness, from indifference, let us dance. If we have ever been freed by our God, let us join in the dance. Sisters and brothers, let us join in the dance. Let us delight in dance to praise and thank our God. Dance. and we danced all through the night. Our God is a God of freedom, of dance, of life. A God who gives us laws that we may choose life. Moses received the laws, and we journeyed on through the desert. In the desert, our God cared for us, as a mother cares for her children, providing food and water, seeing that our clothes did not wear out. Our God carried us, as a mother carries a child. It's a long, long way to the promised land. We've wandered over 3 decades in this desert. Sometimes I think we're near our God in the desert, and other times it seems to completely separate us from God. In our frustration and our pain, Aaron and I spoke against Moses. I was punished with leprosy, but Aaron was not. Am I destined for suffering because I am a woman? Can a man go free while a woman is condemned? Why are things different for men and women? In the depths of my heart, I've wondered if Moses feared me, or if Moses was jealous of me that day after crossing the Red Sea, that day when I led the prayer and the dance. Our God had freed me, and I could do no less than claim that strength and freedom. The women of Egypt lead their people in worship. Should our God receive less praise, less service? Anyway, I was put outside the camp with my leprosy. But the people would not travel on without me. For 7 days I suffered. But then Moses prayed for me and God cured me, and we continued our journey. Yes, for over 3 decades we have journeyed in this wilderness. I am old now and I am tired. Will I reach the land our God has promised? Will we ever reach the land where the lives of the poor are as precious as those of the rich? Will we ever reach the land where daughters are considered as valuable as sons and daughters' names are remembered? The land where the lives of children are prized more than the systems of power, prestige, and wealth? Will we ever reach the land where our daughters can lead the assembly in praise, or the nation in making laws for peace and justice? A land where freed people join in the dance, celebrating their bodies as temples of God. A promised land where Egyptian and Hebrew, young and old, lame and strong can dance together. I am old. I will die soon. Will you go on and keep speaking this promised land?
Comments on that?
One thought that occurred to me, if Pharaoh was telling the boy children for 40 years, there were a whole lot of women around. Yeah. Well, and is Aaron older or younger?
Well, we don't know how long Pharaoh was doing that. The 40 years is the time.
It's just that, yeah. Her comment that the bondage became worse.
And evidently, in the Bible, I was reading some of this stuff yesterday, in some traditions, even in the Bible, Aaron's older and some younger, and so there's this big confusion about how they were related. So, but how did, more in terms of the emotional impact and the way she told that story, did it seem real to you?
More women in the working field are going on strike. Mm-hmm. protesting.
Okay. How does that tie into this?
Well, she sort of protested.
Okay. Yes, sort of, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Determined. Uh-huh. And that's what you do when you protest. You determine.
Yeah. And take the consequences. In fact, as I was wandering around,
yeah, they lose their pay wages. They don't get any check. Nothing's coming in.
Yeah. As I was wandering around, this is the third time I've listened to this in 2 days. I noticed the pledge in there involving people's pledging involvement in civil disobedience if Nicaragua is invaded. And so I was just sort of thinking, wow, you know, if they really meant that, that would be a real, you know, no matter what your feeling is about that, but to actually take that kind of a stand and to promise to do that in interrupting family life and in church life and job and the kinds of commitment that would take if that was, this, you know, that to be a prophet or to be a strong person means sometimes to take a real strong stand when you're not necessarily going to be very popular. These tapes, what?
She died an old woman?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, did she have leprosy all this time?
No, evidently she was cured from, I mean, the assumption is she was cured or she would not have been allowed to rejoin them. These tapes are available commercially. There are 7 stories in here of Sarah, Susanna, Ruth, Hagar, Mary of Magdala, Martha, and of course Miriam, including questions for discussion, themes, scripture reading, suggestions for further reading. So that it's a fairly good resource to have for stuff like this. Okay, we have about 1 minute left. I just wrote some of the questions on the board that she challenged people with, both men and women. You know, will we now ever reach a land where the lives of the poor are as precious as the lives of the rich, where daughters are just as valuable as sons and are named, where the lives of children are prized more than systems, where our daughters are leaders of the assembly and lawmakers, where all people can dance together? Are we there yet? Are we at that promised land?
Children are supposed to be a valuable resource, according to law.
Supposed to be.
But also, yeah. Perhaps the poor could too, if they could be trained or could learn and have the opportunity to learn, more scholarships, more support.
Are women valued equally with men now?
I think the women not in that answer to that question, but I think women are being treated equal in some rights.
Some, yes.
Not enough.
I'd like to know how your women value themselves.
I think that's the secret. I really do. I think until we learn to value ourselves first, no one else will value us. I was wandering around the village yesterday, either second or third hand, listening to comments, and one is a very common one, especially for women. Well, you know, I don't really need power, I don't need this, I don't need that, and yet, how many of you in here are not registered voters? See, in the political arena, we claim that we have a right flowing from our being citizens to affect the process. Why do we want to hand that away in a religious system? You know, if we take seriously that God works with us and loves us and is committed to each one of us, and that each of our lives is unique and special and powerful, and no one can be or do what we are, by what right do we have to not claim that our stories are valuable and can be used in the community? You know, it's sort of a way to reverse that, you know. And to have a gift is wonderful, but if we don't have a way of sharing that gift, then the gift will go nowhere. So, but that's the secret. We have to value ourselves as people, but I think particularly as women, that our insights and gifts and creation are gifts for the whole community and start with ourselves.
Well, in the tape, Miriam, when she's trying to figure out why it's happened to her, suggests that maybe Moses is jealous in some way of what she had, what she was given, and that's an interesting idea to me that we haven't, you know, we haven't got to, but
why men might possibly be jealous or afraid or both.
Well, the hour is up. I'm sure the tape has just turned off. Just think today, that last line of hers I think is very good. You know, if Miriam is to stay alive within our faith tradition rather than just be an interesting little oddity that we drag out for Bible studies or try to figure out what the lives of women were in the Sinai Peninsula 1,000 years before Christ, we talk about the Bible as being the living word, and that means somehow that power of her story can be still alive for us now as our story. So just think as you go about your tasks today, will you go on and keep seeking this promised land? And I think that's a very good kind of way to catch hold of the message of Miriam. And tomorrow we will be doing John chapter 4, which is the story of the Samaritan woman. Okay. And then Thursday and Friday, I haven't done this yet because I haven't had the time, but we'll be doing a series of women. So we won't just get two or three, but you'll probably get somewhere in the vicinity of 10 or 12 on the last 2 days after I've gotten your creative juices going and you're ready to move right in. And any comments in terms of...
We've started now. We have a good beginning, so we should keep it up.
All right. Sounds good to me. All right. Thank you.